It is 22 minutes after the hour, Tuesday morning, and we're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist and a member of the Board of Creation Moments, also a vintner and a vigneron, that he grows grapes and he stomps them out in Garden Valley, Texas there, the Valle del Apache winery. And Don, I've got to tell you, I enjoyed some of your Blondie last night.
Oh, you did? Well, very good. What did you have it with?
Well, I had it. Well, we fixed one of our favorite recipes from a Soups and Stews cookbook that I've had for years. And it was a salmon bisque. So it's kind of a cream-based soup and some Italian pretzels with it. And a little Blondie is your white wine. What grape, you know, how do you need, that's, Blondie is your name for, it's a white wine, a dry white wine. What else would you call it if you didn't have the name Blondie?
The grape varietal.
There you
Blanc
go.
Blanc,
okay.
Blanc du Bois, mm-hmm, is the grape varietal, and it's a French-American hybrid that was developed out of Florida at the University of Florida in Gainesville, mm-hmm, by a fellow by the name of Dubois.
Well, so that figures, yeah.
Named Dubois.
I says, assume he was French, too, so, yeah. What's that, what he's
nothing
doing?
Nothing to do with Stanley?
Stanley, no. No. I don't know what his first name was. But
nothing to do with Stella?
Yeah. Anyway, it was a most enjoyable repast, and so we enjoy talking to Don about wines. We've learned a lot. David is kind of a wine aficionado, also. So
I have a question.
No, okay.
You said you enjoyed some of the wine, but there was a part that you didn't enjoy.
Well, me?
And
no.
What part was that?
No, and when it was gone, it was not nearly as
that
enjoyable.
That was not
as,
very enjoyable part when the bottle,
it's kind of, you get a little sad face when that happens.
When the bottle is empty, that would be an enjoyable moment.
Well, okay, yeah. And it was all done at home here. We occasionally, we have some of the Valle del Apache, wines in the house, and we visited Don, mm-hmm, the winery back in, when was that, Don? November, I guess it was.
And yeah, I think it was November.
Yeah, and we never go through a whole bottle at once. And Don, you should know that Blondie keeps very well for at least a few days. So we put a cork and we pump all the air out of it and preserve it that way. So we managed to enjoy it. We kind of extended the. There's no due date on wine, is there?
Mean expiration date?
Yeah, no.
Usually,
date.
I mean, if the key to keeping wine a little bit longer is to put it in the refrigerator standing up.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So you put a cork in it, put it standing up, even with red wines.
Yeah.
Then, because they'll last, a week or two or three in the refrigerator, mm-hmm, but out on the counter, you're going to notice some difference after 3 days.
Well, I've heard white wines in particular taste more vinegary after 3 days if you don't refrigerate it. But if you pump that oxygen out, if you do one of those little pump things, that does quite nicely. So a little wine lesson here. And go ahead, David. I know you have another.
I had another wine lesson to share. Yeah. And then, mm-hmm, that's the key, is to put them in the refrigerator standing up. And I've had mine. I've had red wines last up to three weeks.
Why not lying down?
Oh, because you have more surface area on the wine, so you're trying to minimize the surface area.
Okay,
oxygen's going to get in the bottle, mm-hmm, even after you open it, and so you want to minimize that. And by keeping it standing up, you have less surface area on the wine.
Well, now there's a good tip right there. Okay, learn something. Go ahead.
I had a bad experience over Christmas about wine. My daughter-in-law had bought a bottle of Chardonnay at an auction, and it was a 2014. And I said, how long have you had this? She says, I just got it a couple of weeks ago. I says, oh, and I held it up to the light, and it was a real deep yellow, so it already started to chaptalize. It had already gone. And I said, have you tried this? And she says, no, I haven't tried it yet. I'm sure it's good because it's a really expensive name. And the people that brought it to the auction, they certainly wouldn't give us bad wine, would they?
Heavens, no.
Well, if they're a retailer and want to take a write-off, by donating some wine that's already turned? Yeah. So we opened it up, and I said, I looked at her, and I said, yeah, this turned.
Well, but take heart. It'll really do a job on your windshield, you know.
I said, well, you know, but the bad news was, don't tell people their wine is bad at a party. Just don't do that. I think it's much better.
And
she didn't
advice.
talk to me for the rest of the day, because I think it's much better just to let them suffer, or let somebody else go to them and say, you know,
that's
what
right,
your
yeah.
wine sucks,
don't,
it's awful,
don't take that on yourself. That's true. Okay. Well, so, Don Clark comes to us with a story to tell today, and it's amazing how many neat articles on biology appear on the Breakpoint website. Don discovered this article and let us know about it. We said, yeah, let's talk about this critter. And if you look in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com, in the top of the chat window there's a link to this article, and you can read about it right along with us. And Don, this has to do with an insect called the Philippine snout weevil, which is kind of a fun name. And if you look at a picture of the thing, and there is also a photo of this on the article and in the chat window, you click on that, it'll expand it. He is aptly named, but the secret here is in not just in the beetle, the weevil itself and the colors, but how we benefit from its existence. Explain that to us.
Well, we've learned from, you know, technology-wise, we've learned a lot of things from observing the world around us and observing God's creation in their critters. In animals, whether it be, you know, how to make a proper airplane wing, you know, based on either dolphins or whales, to termites tunneling so that we can create efficient ventilation systems for our skyscrapers. You know, and here's another example. We haven't learned how to do it yet, but here's another example of what, you know, nature has done, God has created in this snout weevil, because on its back, on its, you know, on its wings, on its back, on its, it's got these beautifully colored spots. And the colored spots range on the outside of the spots is orange and reds, and on the inside of the spot is deep blues. And it covers the gamut of the light spectrum just on these spots. Now, you would think, okay, well, you know, there's pigments in the wings that are causing these colors. But no, that's not. There is no pigments. The spots are made of chitin, which is the same material that's used in all insect exoskeletons. So chitin is a very tough material and protein. But it's the way the chitin is arranged that makes this quite unusual, not only to the insect world, but quite unusual in and of itself. Because if there's no pigment in these colorful spots, what's causing the color? And well, you know, the spots are actually made up of tiny concentric circles of chitin, and the little dots, if you will, that make up the bigger spot of color, is tiny little prisms. So they're circular chitin, and the bigger crystalline chitin gives off the red colors, and the smaller and the less volume the chitin has within the circular spherical chitin creates the blue color. So they act like little prisms, and it's a fantastic thing, because the chitin usually doesn't grow in circles. I mean, on an insect, it's usually flat and it's in like sheets, but here whatever mechanism, and of course, you know, this is programmed in the DNA of the insect, it's told to make these concentric circles or little prisms, if you will. And the marvelous thing about these colors is that you can look at it from any angle and the colors stay true. And this is not the case, for example, you know this from your flat screen television. If you're not looking directly at it, the colors begin to fade. And if you go at a very large angle to the screen, you notice that it's not giving true fidelity, at least to the colors that you would like it to. So those, folks sitting on the side aren't seeing the same wonderful picture that you see from head on. And this is true for all of the displays that we have. If you turn them to the side, you're not going to get the true color.
Well, so if science could figure this out and adapt the technology to LCD or LED screens, we're talking about a whole new way of looking at color.
Well, it would give you true fidelity all through the angles that you're observing, which is what this particular insect has, and which drew the scientists who originally investigated it. It drew their attention in the first place, because it is highly unusual. Having these circular, crystalline prisms, if you will, on any insect is highly unusual in the natural world. So not only do we have something very unique, but it can also help us develop new technologies. And this is the area of biomimicry, where we observe something in nature and we say, oh, that's pretty, that looks pretty good or pretty efficient. And then we try to recreate it in the technology world, one, because it is a unique design, and two, it is very, very efficient. Nature is efficient, as opposed to trying to, figure these things out on our own. So the take-home message from all of this is that, hey, if we paid more attention to God's design, how rapidly would our technology advance, and how much more we should be able to say, wow, God really designed a fantastic world around us, and it's there not only for our enjoyment. Why would you put these color spots? You ask your question, why put these beautiful colorful spots on an insect and on a weevil that, is going to spend most of its time probably digging into, dead trees or such, and not going to be seen, but yet, there it is. The spots are there.
Well, I know in the case of some butterflies and caterpillars and things, their pigmentation or the way they reflect light communicates something to predators that they're perhaps poisonous, even if they're really not. They have somehow inherited or adapted this technique of scaring off predators with their color, the bands of color, either the stripes, that is kind of universally recognized throughout nature as meaning a poisonous critter. And so it's a means of survival, and that may or may not be the reason for these colors, but they're certainly beautiful. And I've got to wonder if maybe it would be camouflage, but these seem to make the beetle stand out, not be hidden. That's the amazing thing.
Right, exactly. Uh-huh. Now, it may be, as you said, it may be a defense mechanism, some type of defense, because it may look like, to a predator that would normally eat the weevil, it would, might scare them away. Mm-hmm. Because, the spots, there are some spots on the beetle on the weevil that looks like eyes. And so, I don't know. You never know unless you do a complete study of, where the weevil lives and who eats the weevil normally.
Well, I've got to ask, the basic question here is, if it weren't for the design that we find in nature, Could we do anything at all on our own without that inspiration, without that pattern to follow, without that clue as to how to make things work given to us by God's creation? What good would we be?
Well, it would take us a lot longer to figure things out. Let's put it that way. There'd be a lot more trial and error, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, from the use of fire to the invention of the wheel to gears, all that, it comes from nature. If we didn't have that source to observe, you know, Paul wrote about how the evidence is plain all around us, how we learn about God's presence and his creativity and his majesty from his creation. If it weren't for that, where would we be?
That's a good, point, because I think the dark ages kind of, you know, exemplified folks kind of ignoring, not only ignoring scripture, but, you know, ignoring things like that. And it was very oppressive time.
Not only ignoring, but in the Dark Ages, there were massive amounts of early church documentation and writings and thought that were destroyed willfully. Mm-hmm. and lost to Western civilization, at least. I can't speak for Asia so much. But, you know, without what our forebears have built upon, how long would it take us to invent a TV or a radio or build a battery? This is a basic question, and in fact, we've addressed this before. The question is, do ideas originate in the brain or from outside? In other words, without our powers of observation, our ability to receive patterns and ideas and put two and two together and get four, we would be lost.
Yes, well, it would take us a lot longer to figure things out, I do believe. And, you know, if we don't acknowledge the Creator, and if we don't particularly acknowledge that, hey, you know, this world around us is actually created, and it was created by a being that is far superior, you know, and far more advanced than we are, in that, hey, you know, we could learn. We can learn from the world around us. If we have just the opposite view that says, oh, you know, everything just happened by chance. I mean, how do you explain these spots on these, on this this small snout weevil, if you will? How do you explain them? And how do you explain even having a weevil in the first place? And the symmetry of the weevil and the various joints of its legs and specialized, you know, the feet and hands, if you will. They're not hands, mm-hmm. but, you know, how do you explain all of that if things just came about through a random, haphazard type of experimentation of, end quote, you know, nature over millions and millions of years? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. But if you attribute it to a God of creation, a God that is full of not only intelligence, but everything that we see around us is designed. And when we look out into space, you see the design of the heavens. You know, and of course, Scripture says that the heavens declare the glory of God. So if we look out into the heavens and do not see God's creation and his order, and or look here on earth and look at the animals and the things that we see around us and don't see, you know, creation and that glorifying God, then we lose, as you say, I mean, we lose a lot, and we won't come to... we won't come to the right conclusion. But at the same time, I think, you know, as in the Dark Ages, it would put us in the Dark Ages, because there's no reason to do an experiment or to try to create anything if you think that everything came by random chance. And so, you know, why would you do an experiment on anything? Because the next time you do an experiment, if everything is random, you're not going to get the same result. Mm-hmm. But so God's creation allows us to even, you know, think that, well, we can repeat experiments. We can come up with hypotheses as to, or guesses to how this particular creature, in this case, you know, got these spots. And then, you know, how can we mimic that, you know, through technology? And so, you know, there, it's an interesting question, and I think that we would be far less advanced if we completely ignored the beauty of God's creation around
us. And beauty is a whole separate issue, but just the functionality. If we learn the most amazing things from the most mundane of things. I mean, here's a weevil, lives in trees, and holds the key to maybe some technological advances that we can make here. And then there's a corollary question here too. Given it's God's creation, and it's marvelous, and it's amazing, and it's evidence, proof even, of his being and his love for us, but it's all a gift to us. And it only works when we were able to receive it and make sense of it. So he's given us that gift too as human beings, the ability to observe and be rational and analyze and construct and create. Is that not the image of God that we've been given, that built into us?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, that's this whole thing. We are, you know, if you don't understand the end of Genesis 1, it says, you know, that let us make man in our image, in the image of God, let us, you know, make, you know, man and woman. Mm-hmm. If you don't understand that, if you don't believe that we have the ability, that God has given us the ability to make things, to create. You know, I just started a Bible study at church, and the first question is, you know, who is God? Mm-hmm. You know, what's the attribute of God that you attribute to God and nobody else? I mean, what makes God God? And the answer, you know, that you come back with is that he's the creator. You know, if you're not going to attribute, you know, that at the attribute of a God to anything else but to a creator. So that's kind of his first attribute, is that he created everything. And so that's the starting point. And he, in his, you know, marvelous design of us, gave us the ability to create. Now, we can't create from nothing, ex nihilo, like God can, but we can observe and put things together, if you will. It's more making stuff, but it's creating. It's coming up with something new from the things that we see and use around us.
And it's a good bet, I think, that all of our technology, all the man-made marvels around us, and that's been especially apparent over the last, say, 150 years, from aviation and space flight and medicine and all kinds of things, that we learn from things that have been given to us to see and to learn from. Those gifts, simple gifts. That's the name of this song, by the way. I think we should use this and draw things to a conclusion. Don Clark, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, I want to point out their website to you. You can reach them from brokenroadradio.com. A simple click will take you to creationmoments.com, and they're a storehouse of knowledge, scientific knowledge, about the biblical story of creation. And to give them pay a visit there and look at some of those materials, I think you'd be impressed. Don, as always, we're grateful that you joined us today, and we'll look forward to next week, okay?
All right, sounds good. Y'all have a great week.
You too. Bye-bye, Don.
You too, Don.
Yeah, right. Come on.